This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davey, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Clint Eastwood's widely acclaimed new movie, Million Dollar Baby, stars Eastwood as an aging veteran of the boxing world who runs a beat-up old gym and is approached by an ambitious young female boxer played by Hilary Swank to train her for the ring. Eastwood found the inspiration for his character in the late FX Toole, who spent years in the fight game as a cut man, the guy in a boxer's corner who stops the bleeding between rounds so he can stay in the fight. At the age of 70, Toole published a collection of stories about boxing called Rope Burns. One of them, Million Dollar Baby, is the basis for Eastwood's film. We thought this would be a great time to listen back to Terry Gross's interview with Toole, recorded in 2000. FX Toole learned to box in his late 40s, too late in life to have a career as a fighter. But his years working with other boxers and patching their wounds inspired him to write a trunk full of novel stories and plays. He didn't want his boxing friends to know he was writing their stories, so he used the pen name FX Toole. But when his first collection, Rope Burns, was published in 2000, the good reviews blew his cover, and we learned his real name was Jerry Boyd. Toole died 2 years ago at the age of 72 of complications from heart surgery. Let's start with a clip from Million Dollar Baby. Morgan Freeman plays a retired boxer, blind in one eye, who helps run the gym owned by Eastwood's character, Frankie Dunn. Freeman is talking to the young female boxer played by Hilary Swank. She wants to go up against tougher fighters and is frustrated that Frankie is holding her back. So Morgan Freeman tells her the story of an old fight when Frankie was in his corner as the cut man.
They should have stopped the fight, but hell, I was a black man in San Perdue. Blood was what I was there for. Round after round, I kept getting Frankie to patch me up. He's talking about throwing in the towel. But he ain't my manager. He can't throw in nothing. Round after round, he's arguing with me. And I'm almost laughing because hell, it's getting more to him than to me. I go 15 rounds, lose by decision. Next morning, I lose the eye. In 23 years, he's never said a thing about it. Doesn't have to. I can see it in his face every time he looks at me. Somehow, Frankie thinks he should have stopped that fight. Should have saved my eye. Spends his life wishing he could take back that 109th fight. I wanted to go to 110. Thing is, if you want to get to the title, maybe he's not the one to take you there.
A scene from the new film, Million Dollar Baby. Terry spoke with FX Toole in 2000 when his collection, Rope Burns, was published. He read from the first story in the collection, which is about a cut man.
I stop blood. I stop it between rounds for fighters so they can stay in the fight. Blood ruins some boys. It was that way with Sonny Liston, God rest his soul. Bad as he was, he'd see his own blood and fall apart. I'm not the one who decides when to stop the fight. And I don't stitch up cuts once the fight's over. And it's not my job to hospitalize a boy for brain damage. My job is to stop blood so the fighter can see enough to keep on fighting. I do that, maybe I save a boy's title. I do that one thing, and I'm worth every cent they pay me. I stop the blood and save the fight. The boy loves me more than he loves his daddy. But you can't always stop it. Fight guys know this. If the cut's too deep or wide, or maybe you've got a severed vein down in there, the blood keeps coming. Sometimes it takes two or three rounds to stop the blood, maybe more. The boy's heart is pumping so hard, or he cuts more. Once you get the coagulant in there, sometimes it takes another shot from the opponent right on the cut itself to drive the blood far enough from the area so the stuff you're using can start to work. What I'm saying is there are all kinds of combinations you come up against down in the different layers of meat. When a good cut man stays ahead of the combinations, he can stop most cuts, but not every one.
And that's FX Toole reading from his collection of short stories, Rope Burns. Let's talk a little bit more about what you do as a cut man. What are some of the medicines that you have to stop bleeding?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's illegal, but most of the time you're using, and I say most of the time, I'm generalizing, but you use adrenaline 1-1000. It's a topical, and it's a vasoconstrictor, not the kind you inject. Then there's thrombin, which is
is a coagulant rather than a vasoconstrictor. There's stuff called atovine. Much of this stuff is used in during surgery.
What's your training like to do this? Do you study medicine at all, or do you just study with another cutter?
You study with other guys. You pick their brains. You have to remember that what you're working on is a restricted area, and the tissue's not very deep. Okay, it's not as if you're trying to work on someone who's suffering a stab wound in the liver. It's shallow tissue. Sometimes it looks like during the fight. Sometimes you think you're looking down into a volcano, but it's that's obviously not the case. So you're working on the face primarily, the forehead, the scalp maybe, and so you learn how to stop that blood. You don't learn how to deal with stab wounds.
Tell me more about what goes on in the corner during the period between rounds. If the fighter is tired and he's bleeding, who's paying attention to him? What's everybody doing? Who's competing for his time there?
Well, there's what you do is you get him breathing deeply from the diaphragm, number one, and you water him down. You put ice packs on him, and you get him breathing. Now, if he's cut, you've got to do all of that and get the blood stopped at the same time. But the fighter is completely focused on you. And he trusts you. He's put his life in your hands, which is one of the reasons I'm so careful about what I do with these kids. And so he's focused on you, and he's learned through the whole training process to listen to you. While the crowd is roaring, he will hear your voice above them all if you shout instructions up to him. But now he's cut, and now he's tired. You get him breathing, you cool him down, and you'll be surprised how someone in good condition, and I'm speaking cardiovascular now, will revive in just that time. Now, if he's terribly hurt, I've called fights off, but that's the last resort. You don't want to do that because again, his future is in your hands, but you don't want to make a decision to make his future his past either.
As the cut man, it's your job to stop the blood when a boxer's bleeding, when your boxer's bleeding. And I'm wondering how the whole idea of bleeding has changed in the HIV era.
Well, you know, when the HIV really hit and AIDS was rampant and it first hit, got the publicity it did, 10 years or so ago, we were instructed to wear gloves, rubber gloves. The fighters at that time and since have had to take AIDS tests. So at that time it was a much bigger problem than it is today. Now I don't even think they hand out rubber gloves anymore because. The AIDS test comes along, and it's yesterday, you follow? And so they know whether or not these guys are infected. There was a heck of a heavyweight here not too long ago whose test proved positive for AIDS. And here was a big monster of a guy. The odds are he got it using steroids because he was a tall, thin kid at one time. And 2 years later, he's a monster heavyweight.
How would you get AIDS by using steroids?
The needle.
Oh, I see. Got it.
So these guys might be in the gym and say, here, you use the needle, I'll use the needle, you use the needle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People often are quite foolish in terms of what they do.
Huh. You know the expression punch drunk, where somebody seems to have lost some of their senses, some of their capacity to think and speak because they've been knocked around too much.
Sure.
Do you see boxers who actually have that condition?
Sure. Yes. I work with one right now who talks like that. He talks to a known, and he walks with a limp, and you have to say, what? What did you say? What? Now, why did that happen? That happened because he was a great young fighter who never got into shape. He tells a great story. He says he prayed before every fight. He said, God, please let me get through this fight, and I promise next fight I'll be in shape. And he said, and I never got in shape. So he fought too long. He got hit too much. One of the reasons he's talking that way is because his nose is broken. It goes off at an angle. But indeed, there's an example. And you know what? He has no regrets whatsoever. He'll joke about the whole show.
In your book, you write, boxing is an unnatural act. Everything in boxing is backwards to life. Instead of running from pain, which is the natural thing in life, in boxing, you step to it. You've boxed as well as worked as a cut man. What's it like to try to get over those natural instincts and replace them with boxing instincts?
Well, I boxed, but you have to understand, my boxing began when I was 48, and I sparred in the gym. I worked out in the gym. I did what we call worked. And I didn't do it as long as I would have, but and you also, if you can imagine, I wear glasses, so when I was sparring, I was throwing punches at shadows, so I probably took more shots than I would have. What happens to you is you become focused on the idea of landing your shots to the other guy, of doing damage to your opponent. And so you take shots, and you have to understand that you're in what's called, you know, Hemingway called hot blood. And so the shots don't hurt you as much while you're excited, because adrenaline is part of the formula. It's later on that fighters, you know, for a day or so afterwards, they'll be holding their ribs, or they'll, you know, you'll see fighters wearing dark glasses for a couple days, that sort of thing.
I imagine it was a little harder for you to take blows or heal from wounds in your late 40s.
Oh, sure. And I had teeth cracked. I'd had my nose broken before, but I had it broken again. And I would have kept on boxing. I had to quit because I developed a jaw problem, and I was told that I had to wear braces. So you can't box and wear braces. So that's a regret that I have. But nonetheless, a necessary thing for me to have done. Along the way, I found that I was able to do this stuff. I was able to focus. I was able to remember the mechanics. First of all, do the mechanics. The mechanics free your mind. Now, how do you hit this other guy? In a street fight, you can rush up and grab someone by the shirt, by the throat, by the neck, by the head, trip him, knock him down, kick him, and all of that good stuff. But in the ring, it's very hard to hit an opponent who's not going to stand there and fight you back. If he just moves, you're probably not going to be able to do much more than tap him on the shoulder. So, you know, I learned how to do all of this stuff, how to cut off the ring, how to throw punches correctly, how to protect myself. So, you know, it became a way of life for me to the degree that I actually quit writing. I said, why am I ruining my life writing when I can do this other thing? I can participate in it every day instead of being an outsider, instead of being, you know, someone howling in the woods for all those years. And writing became unimportant to me, and I said, forget it. I'm not gonna hurt like that anymore. And so I know about hurt outside of the ring as well as inside of the ring.
You're talking about the hurt of rejection?
Absolutely. That would destroy me. It would just put me flat on my face.
That hurts more than the broken nose?
Oh, absolutely. No comparison. I'd take a broken nose any old day. To sit there, you know, with that brown envelope in your lap and your head in your hands, and you say to yourself, who am I kidding? I'm no good. If I was any good, somebody would have bought this. I'm just kidding myself. I've wasted my life. I've thrown it away. I thought it was the muse who kissed me, who tapped me on the shoulder, and it was a whore that did. And I've been drained of all my resources. Here I am, a complete fool. Why am I doing this? I've just kidded myself. And I'd go through that, and then slowly, I'd get back to my feet. Suddenly, another story would play before my eyes, and I'd be back at it again.
FX Tool speaking with Terry Gross in 2000. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2000 interview with the late FX Tool. His boxing story, Million Dollar Baby, is the basis for a new film by Clint Eastwood.
Now, I know as a young man, you studied acting with Sanford Meisner, the famous acting teacher at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York.
Yes.
You had written plays that weren't produced, but you wrote them. Any connection between boxing and theater?
Oh, there's a lot of showbiz in the game, and the audience is there to be entertained. You entertain them differently than say in the theater, and yet the drama is there. It's real drama. It's going on right before their eyes, and all sorts of things are being tested and challenged throughout the course of X number of rounds. And the audience, when they see it and see that it's done well, absolutely becomes enchanted with the activity and are transported.
Of course, in boxing, it's not stage blood, it's real blood.
It's the real deal.
And you like that?
Sure.
Why do you prefer real blood to stage blood?
Well, because it's real. You know, I was a bullfighter, and I was gored 3 times. And so for me to see blood pumping out is not that big a deal. I was gored in the bladder. I was gored in my left leg a couple of times. One of the times there were 3 trajectories that were as long as your hand. And at the time, I weighed probably 140 pounds. I'm 6 foot tall, so you can imagine how thin my leg was. It's part of the territory. It's the price of doing business. It's being there at the time when the greatest challenge is met, and then it's also being there when that challenge is met in a positive or a negative way. And so again, it's real drama. It's not playing. Well, I can go home after the theater or go to the local bar and have a few pops and forget about it. This is stuff that you take for the rest of your life, with you for the rest of your life. And that's what I see life as, a series of experiences that should be lived, not nullified, not anesthetized with drugs, etc.
What about street fighting? Were you ever into that? I mean, it's not in an arena, but there's certainly a lot of theatrics and a lot of street fighting and a lot of posturing as well.
Well, I've been in a few street fights. When I was 49 or so, something like that, I was in a street fight and I had part of my right ear bitten off, as a matter of fact. But my opponent was about to go blind, and the only thing that saved him was his girlfriend pulling me off of him. So street fights are nasty and ugly, and the goal is to do maximum damage in the minimum amount of time. So and you get your adversary down, and you want to make sure he cannot get up, and if he does get up, he's never going to want to come looking for you again. In boxing, winner loser, they go across the ring and they embrace and say good fight, and the loser says, "Well, he was a better man today." If he has talent and ability and one thing and another, that may well be the case. So he'll come back and fight another day. Street fights, you don't ordinarily fight the second or third or fourth or 20th time afterwards.
Who was the first person who read one of your stories and said, "I'm going to publish this"?
It was Howard Junker, God bless him, at a literary magazine out of San Francisco called Zizziva, and Z-Y-Z-Z-Y-V-A. And one day I got a phone call, and he introduced himself, and he said, "This is a terrific story. I want to publish it." And I said, "You're kidding." And he said, no, I want to do it." And we chatted a moment, and I think for the first time in my life, I used the word flabbergasted, because I've never used that word before, because I usually have plenty to say, right? But I could not believe it. At that moment, I was vindicated, if you will. At that moment, I was a successful writer.
Had you sent him the story?
I had sent him the story through the mail, like I always have. I never put any blurb about myself. I just submit the story, and I was always very selfish about writing. If I was going to have any success in writing or be published at all, I wanted to be absolutely on the merit of the work, as read by someone anonymous, reading an anonymous writer. And that's what happened finally after 40 years.
You're somebody who, in a way, starts things or accomplishes things late in life. You know, you started boxing at the age of 48. You're about 70 now, is that right?
70, yeah.
Yeah, and your first book has just been published. This is something you've wanted your whole life. What's it like to get something that you've always wanted, but get it at the age of 70 when you're not looking ahead at your whole life any longer?
Well, it's sweet indeed. I will also tell you that if this had happened to me at 35, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation, because I was, let's say, something of a wild man. I would probably have destroyed myself along the way, because I'm hoping to make some money on this, but let's assume that I would have made some money. I would have probably squandered it and squandered everything else along with it, because I would have wanted to push the envelope on principle, but also in terms of understanding the world, and if nothing else, to have more things to write about. So it's probably the best thing that could have happened to me individually. I look around and I see so many young people who get success early on, fold in the stretch, if you will, and destroy themselves and destroy a lot of people around them. And what a great tragedy that is, because I think many of them end up with success that they don't feel they've earned. I've earned every bit of it. However much I get, I will have earned it. And I don't say that as some kind of a nut puffing myself up. I'm just saying I paid my dues. Here it is. Thank God it's here. And I'm going to protect it and nurture it to the best of my ability.
Well, FX Tool, Jerry Boyd, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a great delight to be with you.
FX Tool speaking with Terry Gross. He died in 2002. The veteran cutman's boxing story, Million Dollar Baby, is the basis for Clint Eastwood's new film. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.